Welcome back to Hashrate Up. Today is all about Bit Digital. I am joined by Sam Tabar, CEO of Bit Digital, a Nasdaq-listed mining company with 3.7 exahashes under operation. They have 45,000 ASICs owned and deployed and mined just over 6,000 Bitcoin to date. We'll speak about the halving, the company's history, the diversification strategies, and much more. Enjoy, guys. Thank you. Hello, everybody. Like I said in the introduction, today I'm joined by Sam Tabar. We are recording at block height. Scroll down. 829246. Our hash rate 30-day is 538 exahashes. And our hash price currently sits at 7581. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I can't complain. It's still very hot here on the southern end of the globe in Cape Town. So, can't complain.
Well, here in New York.
Yeah, we pick and choose these days. We work from anywhere. Sam, before we get started, people who might not be familiar with your person, give them a brief background, 30 seconds on your person and how you sort of stumbled into the space.
Sure. I started my career 24 years ago. I feel old now. And I started as a lawyer for I was an attorney for a law firm called Skadden. And it was based here in New York. And I worked there for a number of years and then moved over to Japan and helped build a Japanese hedge fund. And we did that over 7 years. I was responsible for capital raising. And we ended up becoming one of the largest investment management houses that's independent. We had well over $10 billion of AUM that we were managing, wow, primarily a lot of U.S. Institutional capital. I did that for a number of years, and then I was poached by Bank of America Merrill Lynch. They asked me to run their capital strategy, which I did. I was responsible for their entire Asia-Pacific region. After that, during that time, Satoshi's white paper came out. It definitely caught my attention. But Bitcoin was being used for things like Silk Road and just more illicit purposes. But it did remind me of the early internet days. When the internet came out, most of it was, you know, there's a lot of porn and it appealed more to the base desires of humanity. And it grew from there. Nobody knew that Uber would come out when the internet was invented and became popularized, started about 30 years ago. Since the dawn of the internet, there's nobody that existed at that time that they would imagine things like Uber and so on, these apps that are being built on top of the internet. And so when Bitcoin came out, nobody really understood how it would have been and that you and I would be speaking today. You know, I was in institutional finance. I was an attorney. I was a banker, I was in hedge funds, and I was definitely working for the man. And Bitcoin was an alternative financial system that was invented by a mysterious person or persons, we don't know. And it definitely caught my attention, but it was being used in a more illicit manner in early days. And it caught my attention, but I kept an eye on it. Finished my work with Bank of America Merrill Lynch, running capital strategy for their Asia Pacific region, I decided to move to New York because something called Ethereum was invented. And it really caught my attention because it has this smart contracts functionality where you could rewrite the entire financial system. And so I launched Fluidity, a blockchain company that was based on Ethereum. And we came up with a concept called AirSwap, which was a decentralized exchange. It was really early days. We did an ICO, 30 million, and we funded that. We used the funds for that to create this decentralized exchange. And it still exists to this day. We sold Fluidity to ConsenSys, which is a large Ethereum developer. And my backers are people like Joe Lubin and Mike Novogratz. And that decentralized exchange and the team continues to this day. But I noticed that there was a problem with Bitcoin in terms of the environmental issue. And I had the opportunity to solve that when I joined the executive team at Bit Digital. And Bit Digital is a large scale Bitcoin miner. We've evolved a lot since. I joined them 3 years ago, and we were one of the first to really lean in on the environmental problem by tackling it by using only carbon-free sources of energy. We started that 3 years ago. There's been a lot of press about our ability to do that. And we really created the trend for Bitcoin miners to really look at their sources of power and to use clean sources of power. And notice I say carbon-free, not carbon neutral. And the reason for that is we don't believe in carbon neutrality. Just to remind your listeners, carbon neutrality is basically using fossil fuels or whatever dirty fuel, and then buying a certificate from the market to offset your carbon footprint. So you're neutralizing the damage you've done. That's like taking a giant shit in a room and taking an air freshener and using it to neutralize the smell. We don't do that. So we use carbon-free sources. So we use hydro and geothermal. Geothermal being volcanic power in Iceland, and hydro being what we use in Canada and the United States. And so our fleet is, as of the last public reporting, is 99% carbon free, which we think is important.
Sorry, what about the 1%?
I mean, the 1% you have to, so the way we get our figures is through the grid. We operate on the grid, and so we get governmental figures, and they don't report 100%. They give themselves some room. Perhaps it's to do with the use of offices and so on to run these things, but mm-hmm. It's primarily 99%. We get that figure from governmental sources like the NYSO. And we use those figures to publish our own because we're using their grid.
Okay, interesting. All right. Okay. All right. And Bit Digital as a company, before you joined, what's the history there?
Well, before I joined, it had its entire fleet in China, and that was a jurisdictional risk. So when I joined, we started the process. And it started actually a little bit before. Co-founders felt that it was a giant jurisdictional risk to have your entire fleet in China. And the thing about China is that as an entrepreneur, when you're running a business, the rug can be pulled from under you very quickly. Decisions are made very quickly without a lot of due process. Whereas in the US, you kind of know what the regulations are going to, you could actually see the regulations come out. It's publicly discussed, it's publicly debated. And there's no top-down decision. So before the ban on Bitcoin mining was announced in China, we decided to migrate the entire fleet from China into the United States. And around the midpoint of our migration, the ban was announced. So we accelerated the migration. And we did this during the time of COVID, which was really difficult because there was a lot of supply chain logistics issues during that time. So it was really a massive feat on our end to migrate tens and tens of thousands of machines from China as they announced a Bitcoin ban and as the supply chain issues were happening during COVID, and to find hosting providers to park our machines and continue to run a business. And we successfully did that.
In China, what was the fuel source there? Did the sustainability approach change when you joined the team, or was it?
Well, actually, no. There was a lot of it that was in Sichuan. We were using a lot of hydro, but we knew that it wasn't to do with China's decision. They said it was to do with the environment, but we think it was a little bit more complicated than that. There are rumors that it had to do more with control. That China is a bit allergic to Bitcoin because they don't have a full control over that commodity. And as you know, I think China prefers to have some sense of control over things. Bitcoin, as you know, is a decentralized commodity.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just interesting because sometimes, maybe just to push back a little bit, sometimes I feel like that the sustainability pledge is often used to attract investment because it makes it easier, because a lot of money out there cannot invest in things that are not ESG or financially sustainable or whatever. And in my view, I often debate this with myself, right? Would I support the Bitcoin network, whether it was if it was completely fueled by fossil fuels? Because and currently, I would say yes, right? Even if Bitcoin was completely powered by fossil fuels, I'd say it has a right to exist because it provides so absolutely much good in the world, right?
I agree with you.
And naturally, just to add this, I think, or I am convinced, I hope there's is a good study out there that I don't know about yet, that Bitcoin miners or Bitcoin mining companies traditionally and naturally will sort of gravitate towards renewables because at the end of the day, it's the cheapest form of power and everybody's in it to make money at the end of the day, right? It drives mm-hmm. incentives. So I'm right. not sure whether the approach of saying, hey, we only take this or whatever is something that has to be enforced or not, if you know what I mean.
I know what
enforced
you mean.
Is the right word.
The only, and I completely agree with you, by the way, although philosophically, I think it's better to use the power of the future, which is renewables, to power a technology, which is Bitcoin. But I philosophically don't have, I think Bitcoin has the right to exist no matter what, even if it used fossil fuels. So I totally agree with that. But the reality is that we live in a world where politicians weaponize reasons against Bitcoin. And they're using this environmental argument, which I think is a fake argument in many ways, in order to divide the Bitcoin supporters. And, you know, Bitcoin at the end of the day is a counterculture movement. And the best way to divide a counterculture movement is to use the environmental issue, because nobody in any counterculture movement is against the environment. So yeah. The institutions have used, in a very sneaky way, this environmental reason to divide this counterculture movement in Bitcoin for reasons we all know.
To add to that, and I don't want to get too political here, but to add to that, as a German national, this is a conundrum that you see if you studied energy economics like myself, like that things that don't make sense, right? We celebrate the Energiewende in Germany as something that is a huge success. Meanwhile, power prices in the third largest industry in the world, industrial nation, at 40 euro cents per kilowatt hour. That's not sustainable, number one. Second of all, we turn off nuclear to power on the least efficient coal power plants. And then you're trying to sell people, it's all about sustainability. Well, then importing the missing electricity from France, which is also nuclear. Like those things don't add up. And I'm fully with you there that it is absolutely dividing people. And there's not a lot of education around it. The other day I had a good conversation with a German energy consultant and I explained to him for the first time the flexibility that Bitcoin mining can offer the grid and the incentives for renewables and all of that. But I think we're aligned there. It's just sometimes I know the ESG narrative is super strong and it's important. But I think sometimes that it's a bit overplayed because Bitcoin miners naturally gravitate towards hydro because there's really fewer sources available for power cheaper than that, right? I'm very big on Ethiopia. There's a lot of hydro there as well. Anyway, so let's learn more about BitDigital. What machines do you guys operate? What choices have you made going into the halving? Give me some feedback on that.
Well, we've decided we doubled the size of our fleet last year, and this year we're currently at 2.5 exahash as of yesterday or a few days ago, sorry, last week, and we are targeting a 6.0 target exahash by the end of the year. So we're basically going to double the size of our fleet. The composition of our machines is mostly Bitmain machines, S19K Pros, S19J Pros, S19 Pro Pluses, mostly with some S19s. And, you know, as mentioned, our operations are in the United States, Canada, and Iceland.
Interesting. You mentioned on the website it's 3.7 exahashes. That's what I used for the introduction before we jumped on. There is a difference
between the number of machines you have that you could actually. So there's an active portion and a non-active portion. If you add them both, you get to the number you just mentioned. But the active portion is different. And how we distinguish active from non-active is really where the Bitcoin price is. Certain machines are going to be more profitable than others. So we have to blend the activation of those machines depending on where Bitcoin is.
Interesting. I've never heard that before. We can maybe delve into that a bit more. So you're saying you could theoretically, if everything was powered on right now, hash 3.7, but you're turning down some machines because power prices in certain locations might not be attractive enough to have the machines running.
Exactly.
Okay, interesting. Where is that right now? What's causing issues?
Well, for example, depending on one driver is the model, right? So if you have an older model, that's not going to be as efficient. So that model ends up being just collecting dust. We're not going to be using that model if it's not efficient enough for us to be making money. So that's one of the reasons why a lot of Bitcoin miners buy the latest model. We don't believe in always buying the latest model. There's a sweet spot in terms of making money. So, you know, when you buy a car from the dealer, as soon as you drive out of the parking lot, it's already down quite a bit. So we understand that concept very well. It's nice to have a very shiny, beautiful, brand new car with the new car smell, but you are paying an irrational premium for that. So we don't always buy the latest. We try to figure out where the needle should be in terms of the risk reward and buying the latest machines.
Okay, interesting. All right. So going into the halving,
it's probably worth mentioning we adopt a counter-cyclical strategy when it comes to growth. So there was a time, I think it was in 2021, where everybody was going crazy, buying a bunch of machines. We actually did not grow too much because the numbers didn't make sense. The machines were 10 times more than they are today. And so now we've been lately aggressive on growing the fleet because the machines are at a low price relative to where they were a couple of years ago. So we've been growing countercyclically. And that's because the math makes sense.
Have you jumped on the S21 bandwagon?
We are buying. I have to look at our. We are, but not in a material way at the moment.
All right, interesting. And then the older machines that are now, you know, not efficient enough anymore to compete. What's your sort of midterm plan for them? Are you looking to hold them until they increase in value and then sell them? Or would you look for, you know, even cheaper forms of power that might have a bit more perceived risk? What's your
That's
approach?
Right. I mean, time is not our friend when it comes to this. As time goes on, there are even more efficient machines that are developed and distributed to the market. So for those older machines, time is not their friend. And so we either offload it by selling it or we just wait for Bitcoin, the price to go up. Because once, as mentioned earlier, if the price goes up on a certain point, then certain models become more profitable again.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Interesting. Where in the Canada region or where in Canada and in the US are you guys active roughly? I give as much away as you can.
Yeah, exactly. We operate in Canada. We don't mention publicly where that is, but in Tennessee and Texas and New York, we're operating here in the United States. Okay. And we have a couple of locations in Iceland.
All right. And is that all self-mining? Is that all hosted or is that all self-owned and operated?
Yeah. So we adopt an infrastructure light approach when it comes to this. And there's very powerful reasons why. We don't want to be in a position where we're, for example, if there are 300 employees in a massive data center that we own in, say, Texas, you have to pay for that overhead no matter where Bitcoin is in terms of price. So we have 6 operating partners that we've contracted with, and we have these 1 to 3 year terms and all these operating partners, and we're able to pull the machines if we want to and reallocate them to other operating partners, either new ones or existing ones, depending on what the economic and legal arrangement is. And so we're much more comfortable with that kind of approach. We do give up a little bit on the upside, because we have a profit share agreement with all these operating partners. The profit share ensures alignment in terms of their incentivization for uptime, but we do give a little bit on the upside. However, we limit our downside. How do we do that? We have a curtailment option with all our operating partners. So we're able to shut down and unplug the machines if Bitcoin goes down a certain price. That way, we're running a responsible business because we know there's a lot of volatility in Bitcoin. And so that's why a lot of our competitors went bankrupt. They vertically own the whole thing, but they have all these mouths to feed when Bitcoin's not doing well. And so they have this massive overhead that they have to deal with. We don't have that. We don't own the data centers. So we are very infrastructure light, and that makes us sleep at night.
Yeah, everything has ups and downs, right? I mean, yeah. Really what matters, I think, is that you don't have any huge loans to service, I hope.
We are debt-free, zero debt on our balance sheet.
So I think that's a lesson learned, right, for everybody. I do think sometimes, and again, you know, I don't operate a large mining facility, so I don't have hands-on experience. But my theory, at least, is that as we go, you know, on with time and more halvings are coming, there's less and less room to pay somebody else's margin in a low infrastructure approach environment, where then maybe economically it makes more sense to operate yourself if you can sort of control all the costs and integrate vertically much easier.
Yeah, that's right. We agree. And by the way, with respect to the S21s, I just remembered we more recently the S19 Pro machines with an efficiency of 23, we think they're better value in that than the S21s. Depending on the batch size, so yeah, I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, I don't know. Would you agree that Nasdaq listed companies can sometimes be sort of driven by short term shareholder value and value of the stock, and therefore might, you know, announce that they're now also buying the latest and greatest machines because competitors are, even if it's not the best value for money?
Yeah, I think that's unfortunately, I do think there, we don't do that. But I think there's a lot of, I think that there's some of that going on where they just announce these things, they don't necessarily execute on it, and it just does a pop on their market cap, which creates, I think, distorted incentives. That's something we don't do. But that is something that I think the industry may suffer from sometimes.
All right. With respect to Iceland, Sam, I've heard from people in the industry that power is getting quite expensive there. And even though you guys are following the super sustainable approach that, you know, government locally is not super friendly to Bitcoin mining, how are you guys handling that?
Well, I mean, there was a massive Bloomberg piece that came out about BitDigital and Iceland. And apparently that piece, it was a 9-minute video documentary piece. Apparently that helped organize the thinking amongst people in Iceland, showing that we are not competing with mom and pop household when it comes to energy. We're buying energy that would not otherwise have been used. And so that is something that I feel a lot of people in Iceland prior to the education there thought that we were driving prices up and we're competing with, you know, mom and pop in their household. That, I think the education there, people are realizing that we're buying excess energy, energy that would have otherwise have gone to waste, and we're monetizing that energy for Iceland. So I think the legislative risk is now behind us, given that education. But there are always going to be people who are going to talk about the environment and Bitcoin because they just hate Bitcoin and they're just using whatever argument. But when you unpack what that means, and if you look at what that means, BitDigital is simply buying excess energy that would have otherwise gone to have waste.
Okay. And but would you, as BitDigital, go and plan in Iceland in the future, or are you planning to move your ASICs out? Or what's the long-term vision?
Look, we'll only rack machines when it's justified by the pricing and we can make an adequate return. The climate is very conducive to mining in the Nordics and Iceland. There's a lot of green energy there. And the pricing can be expensive depending on the situation, but we're always looking at the pricing just to make our decisions. We did open up recently an AI business where all our AI machines are in Iceland. And we've done that because there's no correlation between Bitcoin and AI. There's no halving events in AI. So we thought it would make sense to have a a source of income, a source of revenue that is unrelated to Bitcoin mining, especially as we go into the halving, and we did all that in Iceland. But so far, it makes a lot of economic sense for us to be in Iceland.
Tell me more about the AI approach. I understand it's quite a significant portion of your business. Maybe let's state first, sort of in relation to your Bitcoin mining activity, how much does it matter to you guys?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, last year we made $50 million in revenue in Bitcoin mining. We started the AI business in January, and that's $50 million a year alone, just in AI. And we aim to double the size of that revenue by the end of the year. So that's just an AI alone, and that's completely unrelated to the price of Bitcoin. And we have a client, an anchor client. We intend to diversify our client base, and we're basically renting specialized computational power. So we have these HPUs, these HPCs, these high performance computers, H100s, and we have been able to secure thousands of these machines. And what we do is we rent the computational power to people who are building large language models. And we have this anchor client paying us $50 million a year. That's going to grow. And that is something that makes us very happy, because no matter where Bitcoin goes, we're going to do very well. So we end up being this incredible business with a Bitcoin call option, which is really, you know, in a way, a very sweet spot place to be for us.
Where's the difference in operating Bitcoin ASICs and AI gear?
Yeah, I mean, that's like comparing the AI computer is like a Lamborghini, and Bitcoin mining is like a Hyundai. That's those very different machines. The AI computers, these H100s, are very expensive, very specialized machines. And they're powering AI applications and large language models that you require. These are the best computers on earth right now. Whereas Bitcoin mining machines, yes, they're solving these mathematical questions and guessing numbers, but you don't need the same computational power or the same kind of data center for Bitcoin mining as you would for AI.
How much does a machine cost right now? One of those
you talking, it really depends on the model.
Okay, best in class.
We spent about $50 million to buy about 2,000.
Wow. Okay, that's crazy. All right, and then the business behind it, Sam. What's different there? Do you need to simply just again plug them in and offer the computing power on a marketplace, or how does that work? Like what
we does have your a contract. Yeah, we have a contract. Yeah, the client is building large language models, and they've contracted with us for 3 years to build, and they're renting computational power from us. Why didn't they do this on their own? Well, their specialty is to build large language models. They didn't want to get into the hardware. You know, we are specialists in procuring high performance computing, whether it's Bitcoin mining, whether it's AI. Those relationships translate the know-how in securing those machines, the know-how in trying to find the right data center to park those machines and to make the whole thing work. That's something that we understood from Bitcoin mining, and we're able to translate that pretty easily into the AI business. But the difference is that AI, we have certainty of revenue for 3 years with this client that's building large language models, that's renting computational power from us. And the Bitcoin mining side, you can't really predict where the price is going to go. So we don't know where the profit's going to be. We don't have visibility over the next 3 years as to how that's going to go. Bitcoin could go up to 200,000. Of course, I believe Bitcoin's going to go up. I think structurally it's going to go up, but cyclically there are going to be a lot of gyrations. And those gyrations, we just don't know how they're going to be. We don't know how long those gyrations are going to be. And so we felt it was prudent to run a business instead of running it on hope, running it on just hope that Bitcoin goes up, which we think is a pretty bad strategy. We think it was responsible to have this solid AI business. And then we have a call option on Bitcoin. We double the size of our Bitcoin mining fleet. We stay in the game. And the reason why a lot of people buy Bitcoin mining stocks is because there's a lot of beta in Bitcoin mining stocks. So if Bitcoin goes up a little bit, Bitcoin mining stocks goes up even much more. I think last year, if I recall.
The other way around, though, as well, right?
That's true. That's very true. That's very true. So people buy Bitcoin mining stocks for the beta. And so we have that. But no matter where Bitcoin goes, we're going to do very well anyway, because we have a very massive AI business. And there's nobody in the sector that can really say the same.
Crazy. I mean,
by the way, the market has not given us credit for that. You know, okay. The market has not given us credit.
I was going to say, like, if you run a Bitcoin mine, and I think I've said this before on here as well, I think that the developments within AI, because you require the same things, a lot of power, high power density, operational excellence, uptime, high uptimes,
right.
Big data pipelines, right? I think it's going to just drive Bitcoin mining towards the edges and pressure Bitcoin miners to find ever cheaper power sources, integrate better, have additional revenues from, you know, load balancing and heat reuse and stuff like that. And when it comes to Bitcoin mining, I'm not so concerned about the Bitcoin price, right? And what I'm concerned about is being on the better half of everybody doing what I'm doing, so that I can survive over the long term. Because at the end day, that's what I compete against, right? So even if Bitcoin price doesn't go up, if I have better operations, if I can operate cheaply and produce Bitcoin more cheaply, then I win against my competition, right?
It's a little bit more complicated than that. Like, people should not be looking at how cheap you have. They have to look at the overhead. So if we were vertically integrated, I can get cheaper if we're vertically integrated. But if you're just looking at how cheap your cost of power is without looking at the revenue of the business, because there are a lot of costs associated by finding the cheap source of power. You have to pay for the overhead. You have to pay for the data center. So it's not just how cheap your power is. You have to look at a few other things. What are you paying for that cheapness? You could be paying quite a bit for that cheapness. So we're not the cheapest sources of power, but in terms of, if you look at the business holistically, we're very happy with where we are, because we're not paying a lot of money for the premium that we're paying. And we have this AI business. So we're ahead no matter what.
I've got another pointed question. If you say in Iceland, we use stranded power, you know, you can ramp up and down as Bitcoin miners can when power is not abundant in a location. How does that work with AI? You can't do the same thing, as I understand, right? You can't ramp up and down very flexibly.
So if I understand the question, in terms of power, we have contracted power with AI. It's much less, it's just 2 megawatts. It's much less energy intensive than Bitcoin mining. So that's something that is going for us. It doesn't consume and eat the same amount of power as Bitcoin mining does.
All right. I didn't know that. I thought it was very similar.
No.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. All right. And how much did you have to investigate educate investors of yours on this AI business, on this AI piece? Were they just on board with it, or how much education?
Yeah, it's been a frustrating experience. I go on roadshows and I speak to the markets, and they are not giving us credit for this AI business. I think there are two reasons for it. The first reason is there have been people in our sector that have announced AI aspirations, not AI businesses, but they've not executed on their aspirations. It was just like they were kind of just jumping on the bandwagon of AI. And so we did not announce an aspiration. We announced a business. But I think by the time we announced it, it was kind of too late in a way. The well has been poisoned, where we were just seen as another Bitcoin miner jumping on the AI bandwagon, trying to get their market cap up. And there was nothing. It was just a flash in the pan. So we're not a flash in the pan, because we actually have a very material business, and we have certainty of revenue over the next 3 years. It's a real business, but I don't think people understand that yet. And I think people will understand that when our financials come out. They'll see with time, as the audited financials come out and so on, that there is a real business here and we should be measured appropriately. But right now we're not.
Are you planning on doing any heat reuse projects or ancillary services projects in other countries that you're going to?
No, we're just doubling the size of our fleet for Bitcoin mining, and we're aiming to double the size of our revenue on AI.
Okay, interesting. And any other countries that you're looking to get into? Norway, maybe?
I'm always big on Africa.
Anything there?
Yeah, we're always looking at various jurisdictions to partner up with, and we're fans of that. The only thing we have to make sure, of course, is, you know, rule of law and just making sure that the contract is respected. If there's a dispute, there are mechanisms regulate disputes and so on. So that's why we're right now currently operating in Iceland, Canada, and the United States. We just want to make sure that these contracts are always respected, and that the contracts will not just become null and void if somebody else in power comes in. And that's something we have to keep in mind.
Okay, interesting. So that's something that you assign a lot of importance to, is regulatory clarity. And if you know, the other day we saw the US come out with certain reporting needs for Bitcoin mining companies and stuff like that. How do you see that on the risk curve, you know, when it comes to mining in, I don't know, in the Middle East versus the United States?
So I think you're referring to the Department of Energy's requests on Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what it was called. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's for the hosting providers. So yeah. So listen, there's always a regulatory, there's always some regulatory tension on Bitcoin mining, because I don't think legacy finance likes Bitcoin, so they keep pushing politicians to find ways to take it down. And that's why we're jurisdictionally diversified. We're in three different countries, and we'll continue to look at other jurisdictions to make sure that jurisdictional diversification will neutralize or mitigate any regulatory issue that comes down. That's why we left China.
Yeah, maybe let's talk about that a little bit more, because I haven't had much experience there, or people that have had hands-on experience. What goes into mining or moving your whole operation to a different country? Like, what is that like? Who do you need to connect with to make it happen? And
just the usual suspects, boats, and supply providers. We're working with consultants, and we worked with people who knew what they were doing. And it was a little bit at a time. It wasn't, you know, the entire fleet in one go. We had to do it in various pieces that happened over a year. And by the time the year ended, we knew exactly how to get these machines out there. It's a learning process on the first part. And then it became a much more easier process near the end.
Interesting. Okay.
But, the issues that we were facing then are not the same issues as today. As you recall, we were doing it during COVID, which was a unique time in history, and we don't have those experiences. We don't have those problems. The problems we had then are not the same as today.
Yeah, now we have other supply chain issues, right?
Yeah, the Red Sea, yeah, for sure.
And there's a large inflation of boats coming my way around the Horn of Africa.
They're all
coming down here. Yeah, and in theory, you know, I'm working on some projects. In theory, you should make shipping maybe cheaper to South Africa.
Theory.
I was thinking, but that stuff is another rabbit hole for me to sort of explore and delve into. If you had to start over, Sam, what would you do different? If you had your sort of initial investment today, wanted to start a mining company, how would you go about it with the experience that you now have?
Well, I mean, you have to have very sizable money at this point to launch a Bitcoin mining company. So that's one thing I would, you can't really do it alone at this point. You have to be very large scale to make it happen. But I would also caution about drinking your own Kool-Aid when things are, when there's a lot of hype. You have to really be fearful when people are greedy, and be greedy when everybody's fearful, which is something we've done. So when people are buying, everyone's trying to buy machines, you got to step back. And when people are being very bearish, that's when you buy the machines. So you have to really adopt a counter-cyclical approach. And a lot of people will think you're crazy if we're doing it this time, or you're crazy if we're not buying. So you have to really not go with the herd. And also, if you want to run a business hoping that Bitcoin goes up, that's not a good strategy. Don't run a strategy based on hope. Run a responsible business. So it's good if you have a Bitcoin mining fleet, but also use those same skills that you did to build a Bitcoin mining fleet and create also a business line that's unrelated to the price of Bitcoin. And that's something that we've been doing. So far, so good.
All right, sounds good. So you would not start with just Bitcoin mining. You would start directly with some AI in the mix there. Any initial weighting that you would go with? 50-50 or?
You know, we look at the price of Bitcoin and we try to make judicial moves in terms of growing our fleet. We felt that doubling the size of our fleet by the end of the year, whilst we aim to double the revenue size of our AI, was the right mix. But in terms of the percentage of the revenue split between AI and Bitcoin, it's hard to know. We know that we're aiming to double the size of our Bitcoin mining fleet by the end of the year, but we don't know how profitable that's going to be because we don't know where Bitcoin is going to be at the end of the year. But doubling the size of our revenue for AI, we could do that because it's contractual. The revenue is contractual. So it's a mix that you got to, there's an art to it. It's not a full science. But we think we've adopted a responsible approach.
Do you guys have any theory around the halving? Anything that you model out? Like, what do you guys expect? Or do you just go by different scenarios and try to hedge your bets?
Well, look, margins are going to be split in half. And it's a little bit strange for me to see that the sector is buying, you know, triple their fleet size or buying data centers, and they're increasing their cost, which is not always the right thing to do when margins are going to be compressed. Now, I understand historically Bitcoin has gone up after halving events. You just don't know when that's going to happen. And so you have to be kind of careful on that front. And again, I don't like running a business on hope, but I am confident that Bitcoin is going to go up as it does historically during halving events. It's just hard to time.
Yeah, it's time in the market. Don't time the market, right?
Don't time the market.
Yeah.
And that's why we have such an incredible balance sheet and no debt and this AI business with certainty of revenue. No matter what happens in the halving, we're going to not just survive, but thrive because we have an incredible business.
No, I understand. It gives you a lot of peace of mind. I understand that.
Absolutely.
Obviously. Do you like read what information you guys consume to make these educated guesses? You know, there's several reports out there that, you know, highlight how many machines based on nonsense are likely to be online and at what power price and stuff like that. Like, what goes into the research of saying, hey, are we going to be profitable after the halving or not?
You know, I find that when it comes to research, I've been in finance for a long time and I've been in crypto for a long time. And when it comes to projections, it's like, I find that it's like astrology, like the positions of the stars and the charts. It's the same kind of talk. Like, you really don't know. And 99% of all these projections end up being like not accurate. And I find that the astrology talk is very similar to financial projections. They're looking at charts and positions of this and that. So we look at the research very carefully, but at the end of the day, nobody knows. So
that's fair. But I mean, you can look at unsimilar to astronomy, like there is hard facts to look at, like who bought how many machines? What are they now acquiring? How many megawatts are they operating?
Oh, yeah. In terms of today, data from today are facts. But projecting data from the future is hard. Yeah.
No, but just making estimations of saying, like, you know, if hash price is at this and this level, you know, what will happen to the industry? And just saying, like, where would we be in that scenario, cost-wise and profit-wise and stuff like that? You know, it's going to be a very interesting time in April, I think.
yeah, I think so. I think there's going to be a massive news cycle about Bitcoin miners and how their margins are being compressed. So I think that's going to be interesting headwind, and we've been doing a lot of work to position for that.
Yeah. Sam, is there anything that I have not covered that you wanted to discuss? Any questions that I didn't ask?
I think you've covered it all. And I love your pointed questions. That's great. But I think we covered most of it.
All right. Then lastly, Sam, tell me, do you think that Bitcoin consumes enough energy or not?
If it consumes enough energy?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you something about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the perfect proxy for gold. Bitcoin today is about $600-700 billion market cap. Gold is $12 trillion market cap. There's no real reason for gold to be that kind of market cap, because we don't even know how much gold there is out there, but we know how much Bitcoin, the supply of Bitcoin, we know that for sure. And so that replaces gold as an inflation hedge. That's what most people use buy gold for, to hedge their inflation bets. And that's not necessary anymore with Bitcoin. So I believe Bitcoin will eventually get to the market cap where gold is, because it's going to replace gold as the inflation hedge. And the amount of energy, to your question, the amount of energy that's used to mine gold, that is a much more environmentally disastrous use of you know, raising mountaintops and using child laborers. That is a really terrible industry. And people should be championing Bitcoin and its energy uses, because it's not using child labor. It's not raising mountaintops. It's using clean sources of power. The majority of the sector is now using clean sources of power, and it could replace gold for what gold is doing today, which is to hedge inflation. So I believe that people should be supporting Bitcoin, and that Bitcoin should be constantly using its clean sources of energy. And if we could replace that with the gold industry, which is happening now, that's why gold has been going sideways for the past few years and Bitcoin's been going up. People are already using Bitcoin as an inflation hedge. So that's why I believe structurally Bitcoin will go up. Yes, the halving event. Yes, it's being normalized. Yes, it's being institutionalized. But the real thing that no one's talking about is that it is replacing gold as an inflation hedge mechanism. And so if you're trying to figure out the price of Bitcoin, well, today it's 600 billion, gold is 12 trillion. That's a lot of space to go.
Sam, where do you want to lead people? Where do you want to send them?
Send them in terms of personnel?
Website, Twitter, questions.
Well, please come to our website, but I think also our X account, or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. We've been posting not just how Bitcoin miners are actually, you know, getting the machines and putting them. We put a lot of pictures and the process of procuring and installing the machines, but we also put a lot of thought pieces out there on Bitcoin. And also you could see how the AI operations work. So I would love for people to come to our X account and join us on the journey of building this business.
All right, guys, this was Sam Tabar, CEO of Bit Digital. I hope we gave you a great overview over what the company does, specifically with the importance of the AI business, which previously hasn't been as highlighted. Thank you, Sam, for coming on. Thank you for your time. My pleasure. Thank you, guys. You know what to do. Leave likes, subscriptions on Swan's YouTube channel and all that good stuff. Give us questions, please. Feedback is always welcome. Constructive criticism. Send me some hashes if you want to support the show. All of the instructions for that are in the show notes. And with that, until next Sunday when we talk mining, who knows what'll be the topic or who will be the guest. I have no idea, but we'll find out soon. Thank you, guys. Have a good weekend and a good week.
Thank you, Jesse. Thank you, everybody.